This is Judith Lay welcoming you to Manx Radio and to the podcast of this week's edition of At Your Service. Manx Radio.
What a difference a day made. 24 little hours.
What a difference a day made. So goes the 1950s classic Dinah Washington song. And those words are certainly true if the day is the AFD Software annual charity event and you are one of over 80 charities chosen to receive a share of £1.8 million from the Ramsey-based Postcode People, who each year give away a huge percentage of the company's profits to support local and global charities nominated by their staff and the company's directors. On the programme today, we're going to hear about two charities on the day they discovered they would each receive a substantial donation to support their work. We'll shortly be meeting Rob Bavington from Starfish Asia and Adrian Ewings from Care for the Family. But first, let's have some music. Today, I hope you're going to enjoy some Celtic music from Lindisfarne by Keith Duke. This is Come My Lord, My Light, My Way. There'll be more Celtic music by Keith Duke a little later in the programme. But now let's meet Rob Bavington. He's the Chief Executive Officer of the charity Starfish Asia, who came to the island specially to attend the AFD Software charity event. So I was able to chat with him and find out what his charity does.
Well, Starfish Asia was set up 25 years ago by a fantastic guy called Mike Wakeley, who worked with OM in Operation Mobilization in Pakistan. When he retired, he still felt a heart and a compassion for people in Pakistan, and so he started Starfish Asia. He was challenged by a Pakistani businessman who said, actually, if you want to do something to help the most needy and the minority Christian population in Pakistan, then get them educated. So that's what we do. It started out small, just supporting one or two small schools, and we now support 43 schools, and that encompasses about 9,500 kids.
What kind of areas would these schools be in, Rob?
It's a complete mixture. So we don't have any very, very isolated, but the majority of the Christian population are in the Punjab, but that's quite a large area in Pakistan. But they all are very poor communities. So they're either poor rural communities or poor urban slum communities.
So effectively, we're talking about children who would not have access to education in the normal way.
Yeah, exactly. There is state education in Pakistan, so there are schools there, not in every area. So some areas have no schools. But for the Christian population, it's quite often a challenge going to the government schools because they are a small minority. They have difficulty. The curriculum is a little bit, biased in terms of their portrayal of minorities. And we have lots of stories where kids have either felt discriminated against or actively experienced sort of persecution and discrimination. So a lot of parents, even if they understand the importance of education, won't want their kids in those sorts of situations. So being able to support local initiative takers who see the need for that community to have a school which follows the curriculum, so it prepares people for the national tests, but also has a Christian content to help them grow in their faith and grow in an assurity of who they are as a Christian minority in a Muslim country is really important.
And also we know that education is the platform to rising up out of poverty. There isn't any other way of doing it, is there?
Exactly right. And the history of the Christian minority in Pakistan comes from the mid-1800s, where a lot of low-caste Hindus came to Christ and became Christians. And because they started off in low caste, they kind of continue to bear that self-image of who they are as low caste, but also seen from the outside as being very, very low. And so predominantly they end up working in brick kilns, virtual slavery, or on the agricultural sites, or as sweepers going down sewers and cleaning muck. And unless someone does something with education, the same kids are going to end up doing that, and their kids are going to end up doing that, and their kids are going to end up doing that. So it's wonderful to be able to be in an organization which, it's not huge, even though we're helping 9,500 kids, but it's making a difference to individuals. And we have stories of how kids are now being doctors or lawyers. A blind girl we helped is now a professor of Urdu. So, you know, it's stories like that which encourage one.
They must really, really lift your heart. I'd like to find out how you got involved, but before that, the name Starfish Asia, why is it called that?
Well, Starfish Asia comes from that well-known story of the little boy walking along the beach. He sees tens of thousands of starfish washed up, and he picks one up and he throws it into the sea. A man is watching him do this, and he comes up to him and goes, you know what? What on earth are you doing? There's so many thousands and thousands of starfish. You're not making a difference. And the boy picks up another one and he throws it back into the sea and he says, I made a difference to that one. And that is where we focus, you know. The needs in Pakistan as a whole and even the Christian community in Pakistan is huge. And if we lose sight of helping the individual, either one individual or one school or one area, it's so easy to get swamped.
I was going to ask you why you're doing what you're doing. And I can see that you're doing it because you're so moved by what you've seen.
My personal history starts with my grandfather, who was a missionary in Pakistan. And my father went out there to do what's called business as mission. So he worked as a civil engineer in Pakistan. I grew up in Pakistan and went to school till I was 16 there. So I have experienced, even though I had a very, very privileged upbringing compared to the majority of Pakistanis. But I've seen that poverty firsthand. I've seen the effects of it. And so when the founder of the organization was stepping back and they were looking for someone to take over, I just felt I was the right person at the right time to try to take it on to the next level. I'm based in the UK, but I visit twice a year. And culturally, I think you have to be very aware of the culture. And I think I have some of that because of my upbringing. And I can understand some of the language and things, so that also helps. But it's really that understanding the situation in a different way because I've lived there, which really, really helps. It's an interesting model because there is another organization which isn't just working with Christians, but is working with education, who have a different style. So they go in and they set up and they build a school and they run the school from a central office, right? And they have thousands and thousands of schools, and that's doable. Our model is about finding someone who is already doing it, who has already sacrificed in order to give kids an education, and recognizing the leadership in that person and then saying, right, here is someone who, with a few more resources and a few more ideas, could develop something much bigger and better. And that's where the trouble comes, because you can't dictate, because it's his project or her project. And so you develop a partnership, and that's always going to be tricky. You know, it's much easier to stand there and tell someone what to do than to take time and invest in them and help them to see what steps they could be doing, and then help them with the resources to do it. It then becomes something bigger than just educating the kids. It's developing leaders in the community. And that's not just the project leader who runs the school, but also with the teachers. You know, obviously, it seems strange to have to say this, but if you want good education, you need good teachers. And if you're working with a Christian community who generally don't have such a high education, where are the teachers going to come from? So a lot of investment then has to also be done in teacher training and professional development, so the teachers become better teachers and can better help the whole community.
I'm guessing that everything you do relies upon charitable donations. So what difference, this donation from AFD Software, what's that going to help you to do?
It is only through kind donations like this one that we can do anything. Our partners in Pakistan are completely dependent on outside help for their resources. So a gift like this from AFD gives a great encouragement to continue, because knowing that someone else sees the work and believes in it, it lifts our spirits here in the UK, but also out in Pakistan. And it'll just help continue making sure those 10,000, almost 10,000 kids get an education they deserve. And hopefully we'll be able to develop other projects as well to put in missing jigsaw pieces, because it's not just about school. What happens when you manage to stay in school till GCSEs? What happens then? You know, are you just going to be an educated brick worker, or are you going to actually then go on to university or to further education than university?
It's tremendously exciting doing anything with young children. They could turn out to be like you and want to be change makers.
Absolutely.
So it is really, really exciting. And thank you, Rob. Thank you for being here.
Can I just say, going back to the story of the starfish, I ended with the boy throwing it back in and saying, I made a difference to that one. After he throws that in and says, I made a difference to that one, he turns to the man and he says, with your help, we could do even more.
Labor to work, bring your mind.
Lighten Our Darkness. More Celtic music from Lindisfarne by Keith Duke. And before that, I was talking with Rob Bavington of the charity Starfish Asia. The day of the AFD Software charity event also made a difference to national charity Care for the Family, when they too discovered that they were receiving a share of the £1.8 million charity giveaway. Care for the Family is dedicated to strengthening family life in all its forms. And here to tell us more is their Head of Engagements, Adrian Ewings.
Head of Engagement is basically a head of relationships. So it's all the relationships that we build with either organisations that are concerned for families. So we relate to schools, churches, prisons, family hubs, and other children's or family charities. And we work with a number of councils as well. Partly it's building relationships there, but also relationships we have with anyone that uses our resources. So we produce a lot of resources that families can use, or which those organisations can use with families. So we're about networking with them, supporting them, building relationship with them. I was a church leader once, so I know how we want to support families. And I come from the Anglican Church over in England, where we have a lot of relationship with church schools. And so we had a lot of connection with families. And so what Care for the Family is able to do is to put good resources into the hands of churches. And maybe an example of one that we're finding is really getting some mileage with families at the minute is parenting in a digital age. One in five parent with under 13s allow their under 13s onto social media. And the stats for the number of kids, even under 10, who have got smartphones is just rising and rising. And also a guy called Jonathan Haidt brought out a book called The Anxious Generation, which is not a Christian book, it's well known. It says that the real upturn of the crisis in children's mental health correlates to when front-facing cameras appeared on smartphones. So two of the areas that we have been trying to put resources into the hands of parents, or maybe to a church who can then work with parents, is in those two areas. So we have a resource called A Mind of Their Own, which helps to just help parents look after the mental resilience, the emotional resilience of their children. And then a whole suite of resources around what we call left to their own devices. So a great book. We're just producing an app with all sorts of helpful videos for parents, and a little thing called a family media agreement. So families can sit down and decide together, because it isn't just the kids who are often hooked on their phones. It's mum and dad, gran and granddad, all of us. So it's a whole family approach to something which is having a massive impact on children's well-being. That's one of the ways that we're trying to resource churches, but also, although we're a Christian charity, we seek to serve people of all faiths and none. We're not the world's experts, but I guess we just understand family dynamics and therefore try to give some helpful hints and direction.
Sometimes we're too close to a problem to think of the solution.
Absolutely. None of what we ever say is rocket science. In the end, we're in the business of just helping relationships. Everybody knows. What's the key to relationship? Communication. So much of all relationships is just helping people to communicate, helping people to listen to each other, helping people to understand each other. But still, we can struggle with it. We get it wrong. And you'll be amazed in how many families kids are not told, I love you, or I'm proud of you. Just the smallest thing has a massive impact.
But if you're a family under stress, when parents are dealing with a relationship breakdown, or maybe a bereavement in the family, or maybe somebody goes to prison, there is a marked absence of love expressed, even if it's felt.
Yeah. Well, perhaps just to share a couple of areas we're finding ourselves working in partnership with others. One is actually with prisons. Every year, about 312,000 children are impacted by having a parent in prison. Over 90% of those would be dads. When a dad's in prison, what does it mean to be a dad? Because you don't suddenly stop being a dad, even though you're not seeing them. And you get little visits, obviously, those family visits, or maybe you write to your kids. And what does it mean if the kids are going through tough times at school, or, you know, they're doing exams? We kind of forget that, well, a dad's still got a part to play within that. So one of the things that we're doing is we're partnering about 32 prisons around the UK, mainly through chaplains, because they tend to be the way in. So we produced a book called Daddy's Working Away. because that's often what a family will say to try and explain, where's daddy gone? And it's actually a book that we've written alongside prisoners. So dads in prison have written it to other dads who are coming into prison. And we've distributed 1,000 copies of that book this year into 32 prisons, just so that dads can hear from other dads, just things, even about going to prison, because it's terrifying. And they talk a little bit about that, but what does it mean to be a dad? We produce a lot of parenting resources, and we have two particular modules. One simply called Dads, a group of sessions on being a dad, and then another group of sessions on handling anger in the family. That's not just anger in parents, that's anger from children, parent to child, parent to parent, child to child. And quite often the homes that those dads are part of are quite volatile, turbulent places. We've got about 12 prisons where those courses are being run, often by chaplains or chaplaincy teams, just to try and help dads. That's prisons. And then maybe just the other thing, you talk about bereavement. We have something called Careline. It's basically anyone can phone us if they've got family issues. They'll get a response within 24 hours. And we can offer counselling if people need ongoing counselling. But the biggest thing I think that we offer is befriending, telephone befriending. So we have about 160, something like that, befrienders who have all been through stuff themselves. One is where parents have lost a child. Every loss is tragic, but we're getting more suicides of children, murders of children, so knife crime. We're dealing with a lot more complex bereavements. Also, families where one or other spouse has died and there are young children in the house. And there's the grief, but then you then become a single parent. So again, we have those themselves who have been bereaved who are then able to help other families or spouses who have been bereaved. We also offer support to families of children with additional needs. And often those who've got children with additional needs often feel very lonely because they look around school or in a play group, the nursery, and think, gosh, my children aren't able to interact in the same way. And again, it feels incredibly lonely. And then also single parents. We run holidays, subsidised holidays every summer around the country for single parents. People always come back to us and say it's all been really helpful, but the two things we hear most are, I realise I'm not alone and it's given me hope. And I think those are the two things that we're looking for, that people no longer feel they're on their own and they've got some hope, they've got some way of moving forwards and thinking, gosh, it is worth keeping going till tomorrow and the next day and the next.
Adrian, you have said earlier on in this conversation that what you offer is for people of all faiths and none.
Yeah.
But you also mentioned that you have a church background yourself.
Yeah.
So, final question, do you feel that this is what God has called you to do? Did you feel a real pull to this?
Yes, I did. I'd been a Church of England vicar for 21 years and then a sort of senior leader in the Church of England for 7 years, which I love. I'm still very involved in a church and I love that. But Care for Family is just, I mean, it's a lovely Christian environment to work in. People are incredibly supportive, but it does feels like a calling. It feels more than just to turn up and do the job. I think like lots of people, you feel like you're making an impact on people's lives. And I think family life is kind of central to everything. We're all part of families, even if they feel a long way away or even estranged. We've been brought up within families or we've had difficult experiences of family, and therefore I feel it's a way that we touch into something very fundamental. It's something deeply worth doing, and certainly that's how it feels.
Thank you to my guests today, Rob Bavington and Adrian Ewings, representing Starfish Asia and Care for the Family, just two of over 80 different charities who each received a share of the recent £1.8 million charity giveaway, something that Ramsey-based AFD Software, the Postcode People, do every year, donating a substantial part of the company's profits to support charities nominated by their staff and company directors. And now, before we're beaten by the clock, let's take a look at our notice board, and we begin with services and events taking place later today. Visiting evangelist Noel Shields from Northern Ireland will once again be speaking at both of today's services in Port Erin Gospel Church. The services are today at 11:30 and this evening at 7 o'clock, with a warm welcome for everyone. There's going to be a wonderful concert by Manx Festival Chorus in St George's Church here in Douglas this afternoon at 3 o'clock. A beautiful mix of contrasting music from Mendelssohn, Vaughan Williams and Bob Chilcott, with guest soloists Matthew Quinn, Richard Costain, Ruth Tickle and Jane Corkill. And the musicians are Marilyn Kissack, Gareth Moore, James Davis and Ed Jeffers, all conducted by John Riley. It's pay at the door, just £10 for adults, and all students, £2 admission. And the Mariners Choir will be in Colby Methodist Church tonight at 6:30, when the preacher will be Mrs. Rita Norrie, with, as always, supper and community hymn singing to follow. Looking ahead now to next weekend, and my thanks to Phil Waring for sending me lots of interesting information about the Isle of Man Organist Association, which is just about to start celebrating its 75th anniversary with a programme of really special concerts throughout this year. Their first event is this coming Saturday the 24th in St Anthony's Catholic Church in Onchan. It starts with coffee in the church hall at 10:30, then Francesca Epifani will give a short organ concert starting at 11. Then there'll be the AGM of the Isle of Man Organist Association at 11:30. Everyone is welcome, whether you're an organist or not. The whole event is free and it would be good to see as many as possible at this relaxed and friendly start to the anniversary year. News from Selby Methodist Church now, and next Sunday the 25th there is no morning service, but instead there will be an afternoon of music starting next Sunday at 2:30. It's a selection of Baroque and Renaissance music, and taking part are Heartsease, Burnbrae Ensemble and Trio Lumina, and soloist Andrew Cole will be playing Marcello's Oboe Concerto. The concert will be followed by refreshments, £10 payable at the door, no need to pre-book, and free admission for children under 12. That's Selby Methodist Church next Sunday afternoon. Also next Sunday, the 25th, there'll be another of the very popular bilingual Manx English services, this time at Ballabeg Methodist Chapel, next Sunday evening at 6:30. Reverend Dr. Janet Corlett will lead the service, and there'll be music too. And that's all that we have time for now, but I'll be back tonight at 9 o'clock with Sundown, and I'd love you to come and join me in our virtual lounge for a great selection of easy listening music, plus your requests and dedications. And so, until whenever we meet again, this is Judith saying thank you for listening and wishing you and those you love a blessed and peaceful week and a very good morning. Station.